New York City used to be told that heading anywhere near 42nd Street was not a safe idea. In Boston, the same was said about what used to be called the War Zone. Remember those days? Almost every city in town had that section you were better off avoiding. Fortunately, law enforcement politics that came together cleaned up those areas. However, today there are areas in many cities, overseas, and as you'll find elsewhere, which are best left to others. Those who adhere to the Islamic faith, failure to obey the boundaries these people create could be costly to you, well, financially, certainly, physically, perhaps. Some deny this idea actually exists. Others in America dismiss it as a problem, quote, over there. My next guest with his new book presents the facts and reality of this issue, which will change you from thinking what if to what do we need to do here. His book is No-Go Zones, How Sharia Law is Coming to a Neighborhood Near You. He's the editor-in-chief of Breitbart London, host of Breitbart News Daily and Sirius XM 125, Raheem Kassam. Thanks for being here today, Raheem.
Thanks for having me.
And Breitbart.com is, of course, the website. Just as a foundation for our talk here, define what a no-go zone is.
Well, a no-go zone can be a lot of different things. There are multiple areas across Europe, for instance, that have one thing in common but lots of different things apart in this regard. For instance, in Brussels, we know the area of Molenbeek is effectively the terror capital of Europe. This is where the terrorists plot, scheme, and even hide after they carry out terrorist attacks if they've lived beyond the attack itself. In the northern parts of Paris, there are neighborhoods where I personally watched women being verbally assaulted and shouted at, made to feel very uncomfortable. In other parts of Europe, they shouted at to wear the veil, spat at, the hijab, I mean, spat at. In Sweden, there are areas where the police won't go, or at least can't go in small, regular numbers, twos or threes or whatever it is. They have to go in quite large numbers, usually two vans at a time, one police car policing the other police car to make sure that nothing else happens while they're there. And in some places, you know, the postal services won't deliver. This is on the record as having happened in Sweden because they find it too dangerous. And if you could believe this, in one of these neighborhoods, we often talk about the solution to this being more policing. In one of these neighborhoods, they couldn't actually build a planned police station because the contractors refused to work there. It was too dangerous. So these neighborhoods have been popping up across Europe for some time now and are really, really very well ingrained, as you say, into cities across the Western world.
When you look at all these instances from Belgium and Sweden, Great Britain, and even starting what we see, some of the things here in America, is it areas taken by force in whatever degree by Islamists, or is it areas allowed to be taken by that native community and the so-called political leaders who are afraid to be labeled Islamophobes or whatever the case may be?
Oh, well, there's very little force about them being taken. There is some force about them being kept. They're actually given by the political classes, by the welfarist political classes. They wanted these people over because they thought they would recognize some sort of economic boom on the result of cheap migrant labor, so they brought them all in. Put them all in the same area, dump them all in, you know, cheap, nasty government housing where, you know, horrible conditions, quite frankly, if you ask me. Very, very counter to this whole nice, fluffy, liberal narrative that they give about loving immigrants. They basically put them all in these tiny little apartment blocks and keep them there. No request for them to learn the language, to integrate, to assimilate. They have willfully ghettoized these people. But what's happened in the meantime is because when you do ghettoize people like that, it creates a vacuum whereby the state doesn't want to deal with them, and so somebody else will. And that other person, those other people in this situation are the radical imams, the preachers, the hate preachers. The people that go into these areas and effectively start cultishly recruiting these people for fundamentalist, literalist interpretations of the Quran, what I call Sharia supremacism. And so that's what's happening now. So you're seeing, for instance, when I went into Tower Hamlets in East London the other day, I mean, just a couple of months ago now, you had a group of, I mean, I must have just gotten out of the, car. About 5 minutes out of the car, and a group of young Muslim men came up to me, and they said, "You're not welcome here." And that's to me, you know, I'm brown. My name's Raheem Kassam. I dread to think what they're saying to people who are white people. How about that?
Yes. Or someone with an obvious name. What if a Cruz de Bello walks in there? I'm certainly not looking like I belong.
Yes. Well, I was going to say to you, but then I can't see you, so I don't quite know what you look like. You might be fine. But I mean, you know, jokes aside, this is a very, very regular occurrence. I spoke to many people, residents, former residents for this book, and they all had similar stories, being chased out, being harassed, being attacked, you know, made to feel unwelcome in their own home cities or their own hometowns. And I'm afraid to say that I have started to see the same seeds being sown here in the United States, too.
Talking with Raheem Kassam, his book, No-Go Zones, How Sharia Law is Coming to a Neighborhood Near You. He is, of course, editor for Breitbart in London. Breitbart.com is that obvious website, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. Now, regarding Mary, let's take San Bernardino and the shooting. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we can go through a whole litany of lists, and, you know, every time we hear of a terrorist, a radical Islamic effort, attack, attempt to attack, that's always dismissed by their defenders and apologists as, well, that's a lone wolf, to the point where we have a, how many lone wolves do you need before you have a trend, has been my response. But how symbolic is what we saw in San Bernardino and the surroundings around it, which you reveal many, many elements for the first time in No-Go Zones, an example of what we're seeing in various locations throughout the nation?
Let's be very clear about this. There is no such thing as a lone wolf attack when it comes to radical Islamic terrorism. And the reason that is so clear, that is so evident, is that you can't be a lone wolf if you're still taking guidance, still taking initiative from somewhere or someone else. That, by its definition, means it's not a lone wolf attack. A lone wolf attack is when you decide on something yourself and go and carry it out. This is not what these people are doing. They're being radicalized. They're being cultishly led down this path. Now, that might be through their mosque. It might be through their school. It might be through the prison system, as we're seeing a massive problem within the United Kingdom. Or it might be through the internet. You know, they might be watching Anwar al-Awlaki videos online, but they're still acting on somebody else's orders, or working with somebody else to make this happen. When you look at San Bernardino, we know for certain now that the reason San Bernardino happened, the two major reasons we saw San Bernardino happen. Number one, Tashfeen Malik, the wife who came in on a fiancé visa, she was not properly vetted. And she wasn't properly vetted because the Obama administration wanted to loosen the reins on immigration. And they chose this as one of the areas. And thusly, as far as I'm concerned, that administration has blood on its hands for those who died and were injured at the Inland Regional Center that day. The second reason is that the Obama administration, again, created an environment within which it was seen as racist or xenophobic or bigoted to actually say something when you see something. Now, we're always told, say something. But actually, when you're discouraged from doing it because you think you're going to be called an Islamophobe, then you don't do it. And this, I have no doubt, led to a lot of people who interacted with Saeed Farooq and Tashfeen Malik sort of shrugging their shoulders and going, well, you know, maybe I'm being an Islamophobe. I shouldn't really say anything. And again, the same politically correct mindset, you know, caused a loss of life, caused great distress to many people there. And it's happened all over the world, by the way. I mean, we've had 33 terrorist attacks in Europe this year alone. 31 of them have been linked to Muslims or migrants, or Muslim migrants. And so this chapter in my book about San Bernardino is not to say that San Bernardino has a physical no-go zone, but that we have a mental one, and we have a political one, something that our politicians won't discuss or will actively discourage us from discussing and from acknowledging. Now, when I say something like that, Chris, I'm immediately told, oh, well, you know, you just want to see every Muslim harassed on the street and their lifestyles made difficult. You know, as if it's one extreme or the other. It's not. You know, being wary, being diligent, being vigilant about this threat doesn't mean to say that you're shaking down Ahmed who's driving your Uber, you know, or Abdullah who runs the corner store. Nobody's saying that. What we are saying is that if you know, and this book walks people through what kind of mosques to look out for, what sort of behaviors were displayed by the terrorists, so on and so forth, before they carried out these attacks, if you know what you're looking for, and if you're educated, and if you're calm, and you're vigilant about these things, then there's no reason you can't spot this stuff a mile away. And I would argue that, many people have done that over the course of time. We know that with the Manchester terrorist attack in the United Kingdom not so long ago, the terrorist's school, his university, was actually discouraged from reporting people who showed signs of radicalization because it was not politically correct. And I would suggest that we could stop a lot of loss of life if we jump over the hurdle of that mental no-go zone.
And really, it's just a simple concept of the old axiom: when you shine a light in the cockroach is going to run and hide. And it's just a matter of the fact that the strength of numbers, and without fear, you can overcome those who truly have fear but are hiding behind a faux interpretation of what used to be a faith that's been polluted. And what Raheem writes about, and by the way, if you don't think this is getting closer and closer, maybe you might want to plan your Labor Day vacation travels to Islamville, South Carolina, which Raheem writes about in No-Go Zones, how Sharia law is coming to a neighborhood near you. He is the editor-in-chief of Breitbart London, host of Breitbart News Daily and Sirius XM 125, Breitbart.com, the website. Raheem, thanks so much for stepping forward with the truth, an educational truth, a factual truth. And I think you're going to silence a lot of the naysayers and the ignorant with what you present in No-Go Zones. Congratulations.
Thank you. And just for your legal liability, I suggest nobody goes to Islamville, South Carolina.
Yes. Duly noted. Thanks, Raheem.
Thank you.